Magellan considered Port St. Julian a landmark of sufficient importance that he wanted to determine its longitude. He consulted San Martin, his official astronomer, who took measurements, consulted with the pilots, and concluded that they might have strayed into Portuguese territory as defined by the Treaty of Tordesillas. The idea appalled Magellan, under orders from King Charles to avoid Portuguese waters and, at the same time, to demonstrate that the Spice Islands lay comfortably within the Spanish realm. The matter was potentially so damning to the entire enterprise that the pilots deliberately obscured the location of Port St. Julian on their charts. Anticipating a long, grueling winter, Magellan placed his crew on short rations, even though the ships groaned with the butchered meat of geese and sea wolves and fish abounded in the harbor. After the unbroken succession of life-threatening ordeals they had faced over the previous 7 weeks, the seamen expected to be rewarded for their courage and perseverance, not punished. Outraged by the rationing, they turned insubordinate. They did not believe the street existed. They had tried again and again to find it, risking death while coming up against one dead end after another. If they kept going, they argued, they would eventually perish in one of the cataclysmic storms afflicting the region, or simply fall off the edge of the world when the coastline finally ended. Magellan obstinately reminded them that they must obey their royal commission and follow the coastline wherever it led. The king had ordered this voyage, and Magellan would persist until he reached Land's End or found the strait. In the following days, the men continued to bicker. National prejudices suddenly flashed, usually at Magellan himself. Once again, the Castilians argued that Magellan's insistence that he intended to find the strait or die was proof that he intended to subvert the entire expedition and get them all killed in the process. In the midst of this turmoil, the officers and crew observed the holiest day of the year, Easter Sunday, April 1st. At that moment, Magellan had one paramount concern: who was loyal to him and who was not. With a sufficient number of loyal crew members, he would be able to withstand this latest and most serious challenge to his authority. Without them, he might be imprisoned, impaled on a halberd, or even hanged from a yardarm by hell-bent mutineers. Magellan openly told his crew that the other captains had resolved to kill him on Easter Day, while he attended Mass ashore. Magellan expected to see all four captains at Easter Mass, but only one, Luis de Mendoza of Victoria, arrived. Magellan invited Mendoza to dine at the Captain General's table, a gesture that would force him to proclaim his loyalty to Magellan, but Mendoza coolly declined the request. Magellan appeared unfazed by Mendoza's insubordination, but the Captain General now knew that Mendoza was a conspirator. Mendoza returned to Victoria, where he and the other captains resumed plotting against Magellan, sending messages by longboat from one ship to another. Magellan capitalized on a piece of luck. The longboat belonging to Concepcion's captain, Gaspar de Quesada, lost its way in the strong current while ferrying conspiratorial messages between the rebel ships and, to the dismay of the men aboard, drifted helplessly toward the flagship and Magellan himself. To their surprise, the crew of Trinidad, at Magellan's direction, rescued them from the runaway longboat. Even more amazing, Magellan welcomed them aboard the flagship and provided them with a lavish meal, which included plenty of wine. At dinner, the band of would-be mutineers drank a great deal and revealed the existence of the plot to Magellan. They confided that if the plot succeeded, he would be captured and killed that very night. Hearing this, Magellan lost all interest in his visitors and busied himself readying the flagship against attack. Once again, he questioned his crew to see who was loyal to him and who was not, and, satisfied, awaited the inevitable assault. Late that night, Concepcion stirred with life. The captain, Quesada, lowered himself into a longboat and quietly made his way to San Antonio. He was joined there in the dark water lapping at the ship's hull by Juan de Cartagena, former captain and frustrated mutineer, Juan Sebastian Elcano, a veteran Basque mariner who served as Concepcion's master, and a corps of 30 armed seamen. Under cover of darkness, they boarded San Antonio and rushed to the captain's cabin, rousting the hapless Mezquita out of his bunk. This had once been Cartagena's ship, and in his mind, it still was. Mezquita offered little resistance as the party of mutineers clapped him into irons and placed him under guard. By this time, word of the uprising had spread throughout the ship, and the crew sprang to life. Juan de Elorriaga, the ship's master and a Basque, valiantly tried to dismiss Quesada from San Antonio before any blood was shed. But Quesada refused to stand down. Elorriaga turned to his bosun, Diego Hernandez, to order the crew to restrain Quesada and quash the mutiny. Quesada shouted, "We cannot be foiled in our work by this fool," and he ran Elorriaga through with a dagger, again and again, until Elorriaga, bleeding profusely, collapsed. As the two struggled, Quesada's guard took Hernandez hostage, and suddenly the ship was without officers. The bewildered crew, without anyone to give them orders, and fearing for their lives, gave up their arms to the mutineers. One of their number, Antonio de Coca, the fleet's accountant, actually joined the insurgents, who stored the confiscated weapons in his cabin. The first phase of the mutiny had gone off as planned. Within hours, the mutiny spread like a contagion to two other ships, Victoria, whose captain, Luis de Mendoza, had resented Magellan from the day they left Sanlúcar de Barrameda, and to Concepcion. Only Santiago, under the command of Juan Serrano, a Castilian, remained neutral. Quesada, for the moment, decided to leave Santiago alone. It was a decision that would later haunt the mutineers. The sun rose over Port St. Julian on April 2nd to reveal a scene of deceptive calm. The five ships of the Armada de Malacca rode quietly at anchor. For the moment, the captain general remained secure in his stronghold, Trinidad. As a test, he dispatched a longboat to San Antonio, where Quesada and Elcano held sway, to bring sailors ashore to fetch fresh water. As Trinidad's longboat approached, the mutineers waved the sailors away and declared that San Antonio was no longer under the command of Mezquita or Magellan. When the longboat brought this disturbing news back to Magellan, he realized he faced a grave problem, but he remained oblivious to the full extent of the mutiny. He believed he had to contend with only one rebellious ship, not three, until he sent the longboat to poll the other ships and determine their loyalty. From his stronghold aboard San Antonio, Quesada replied, "For the king and for myself," and Victoria and Concepcion followed suit. Quesada audaciously sent a list of demands by longboat to the flagship. Quesada believed, with good reason, that he had Magellan boxed in, and he tried to force the captain general to yield to the mutineers. Magellan sent word that he would be pleased to hear them out, aboard the flagship, of course. The mutineers replied that they would meet him only aboard San Antonio. To their astonishment, Magellan agreed. Having lulled Quesada and his followers into a sense of false security, Magellan quietly went on the offensive. He began his attempt to recover his fleet by claiming the longboat carrying Quesada's communique. With this equipment in hand, he turned his attention to recapturing at least one ship, and then he would go after the others. He decided not to attempt to reclaim San Antonio, where the mutineers were deeply entrenched, but Victoria. To get her back, he resorted to a ruse. He filled the captured longboat with five carefully selected sailors and instructed them to appear sympathetic to the mutineers, at least at a distance. But beneath their loose clothing, they carried weapons, which they intended to use. Their ranks included Gonzalo Gomez de Espinosa, the master at arms. Magellan gave the men a letter addressed to Luis Mendoza, Victoria's captain, ordering him to surrender immediately aboard the flagship. If Mendoza resisted, they were to kill him. As soon as the longboat moved out of sight to begin its mission, the captain general sent a second skiff into the water, filled with 15 loyal members of the flagship's crew, under the command of Duarte Barbosa, Magellan's brother-in-law. When the first longboat pulled up to Victoria, Mendoza allowed the party to board his ship. Ginez de Mafra, the best eyewitness to the unfolding mutiny, relates, "Mendoza, a daring man when it came to evil deeds, but too rash to take advice, told them to come aboard and give him the letter, which he set about reading in a careless manner. According to other witnesses, Mendoza responded to the letter with mockery and laughter. At that, Espinoza, the military officer, grabbed Mendoza by the beard, violently shook his head, and plunged a dagger into his throat as another soldier stabbed him in the head. With Mendoza dead, Magellan now held the advantage. No sooner had the captain breathed his last than the second longboat rode into position beside Victoria, discharging its complement of loyalists who stormed the ship. As Magellan had calculated, his guard met with little or no opposition. Stunned by the death of their captain, the crew meekly submitted to Magellan's men. To signal Magellan's triumph, Barbosa flew the captain general's colors from Victoria's mast, announcing to Quesada and the other rebels that the mutiny was ending. Magellan placed Trinidad securely between Victoria and Santiago, now loyal to Magellan. Together, the three vessels blockaded the inlet to the port. The two rebel holdouts, positioned deeper in the harbor, could not escape. Quesada refused to give up. Concepcion and San Antonio remained at the other end of the harbor, offering no clue about the mutineers' intentions. Magellan readied his flagship for combat. He doubled the watch and gave an order to make a plentiful provision of much darts, lances, stones, and other weapons, both on deck and in the tops. Magellan entrusted one seaman with a perilous assignment. Under cover of darkness, he was to sneak on board Quesada's ship, Concepcion, where he would loosen or sever the anchor cable. Magellan calculated that the strong nocturnal ebb tide would draw her toward the blockade guarding the mouth of the harbor, giving him just the pretext he needed for launching a surprise attack.